Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Paul Landcor in for Rachel Miro. The number of paroled sex offenders in California who are fugitive is up 15% since Governor Jerry Brown's prison realignment went into effect. That's according to the California Department of Corrections. Realignment moved many low-level offenders from state prisons to county jails. Before the law took effect in October 2011, convicted sex offenders who removed the required GPS device could be sent back to state prison for up to a year. Now it's 6 months in county jail, with many offenders released early because of overcrowding. While officials say most are quickly recaptured, about 2,700 paroled sex offenders went missing at some point in the last 15 months. That's 360 more than in the same period before realignment. Undocumented students across California are anxiously waiting to hear how much money they'll get for college next year. For the first time, they were eligible to apply for state-funded financial aid under California's DREAM Act. Charla Bear reports far more students turned in their applications by the deadline this week than lawmakers planned for.
When Gladys Castro applied for college, she had great grades, a career goal, and glowing letters of recommendation. What she didn't have was money.
After my first semester at UC Berkeley, I had to take a year off from school because I was already in debt, and I was really scared that I wasn't going to be able to pay it off.
Castro wasn't eligible for federal or state financial aid because technically she's a citizen of Mexico, even though she's been here since she was 8 years old. Her fortunes changed in January when Part 2 of California's DREAM Act kicked in. It allows undocumented graduates of the state's high schools to apply for Cal Grants. The need-based awards can equal full tuition at local public universities. Castro says this is huge, not just to her, but to a lot of people who wouldn't have even considered college otherwise.
Actually, one of my cousins, he was just thinking of working after high school, because we thought he wasn't going to be able to get any money. Because of the Cal Grant, he's thinking of going to community college.
Castro and her cousin are just two of more than 20,000 DREAM Act students who applied for the aid. Diana Fuentes Michel is executive director of the California Student Aid Commission, the agency that processes Cal Grants. She says not all of the students will get the awards, but she adds the state thought 6,000 students would get them, and now it looks like 9,000 will.
We already would anticipate that we'll be above what was estimated in our budget figures.
That means lawmakers will be asked to find extra money for the program. That's on top of paying for 100,000 or so students who typically qualify for Cal Grants. For the California Report, I'm Charla Bear.
Next week, San Francisco's employee retirement system will consider divesting its holdings from gun companies. There's not a lot of money at stake, but as KQED's Tara Seiler reports, there seems to be a growing movement by pension funds to dump their gun stocks.
San Francisco's retirement system only has about $900,000 invested in the firearms industry. The city of Oakland doesn't hold any gun-related stocks that it knows of, but it passed a resolution this week banning any future gun investments. And three public pension systems in Los Angeles are planning to divest their holdings linked to companies that make assault weapons. On the state level, California's teacher and public employee retirement systems are selling off investments in firms that make guns banned in California. And a bill in the Assembly would expand that to cover investments in all gun and ammunition companies. Robin Thomas, the executive director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence in San Francisco, says some of these actions may seem symbolic.
But taken altogether, if a lot of cities or a lot of states started to take that approach, it could certainly have a very significant impact. My understanding is there's almost $100 million that various public pension funds have invested in the publicly traded stocks of gun manufacturers. That is a significant amount of money.
All this action by pension funds follows December's massacre at a Connecticut grade school. Since then, several state pension officials have announced reviews of their gun investments, including New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. For the California Report, I'm Tara Seiler.
For decades, California's counties have been charged with providing health care to poor, uninsured people. That means there's a lot at stake for counties as California decides whether or not to expand health insurance coverage under the new federal health care overhaul. As Sacramento Bureau Chief Scott Detrow reports, county officials are worried Governor Brown's plan to expand Medi-Cal will still leave them on the hook for money they don't have.
It's not the fact the Brown administration wants to expand health care coverage that has counties concerned. It's that the governor's budget wants local governments to give something back as part of the package. Brown's spending plan lays out two options for expanding health care. The first is simply growing the Medi-Cal program. If that happens, Department of Health Care Services Deputy Director Marie Cantwell says the state would be shouldering a major burden currently imposed on counties.
We're going to have growing cost pressures when you have a larger program moving forward, and we do believe that the counties will see a decline in responsibility and costs.
At a Wednesday budget hearing, Cantwell said analysts estimate more than 500,000 people currently in county systems would be eligible for the new expanded Medi-Cal coverage. And if counties suddenly don't have to pay for coverage anymore, Brown wants them to start picking up the cost for other state-funded programs like child care subsidies. But county officials say not so fast. Dr. Mitch Katz says Los Angeles County Health Services, which he runs, will still have major responsibilities.
We believe if all goes well, 1 million of them will newly gain insurance, and 1 million will remain residually uninsured.
The Brown administration's second proposal is to put the counties in charge of the Medi-Cal expansion. That means counties, not the state, would have to pay the additional insurance costs once the federal government stops footing 100% of the bill in 2017. County officials aren't too fond of that approach either. Kelly Brooks Lindsay, with the State Association of Counties, says it would be a logistical challenge.
All 58 counties would have to have a low-income health program expansion on the same day, January 1, 2014, in order to draw down 100% federal match. So if there was one county that couldn't get their program up and running, it would delay the expansion in all 58 counties.
Brooks Lindsay says to meet their deadlines, counties need an answer soon. Figuring out how to expand Medi-Cal is one of the many healthcare questions lawmakers are dealing with this month in a special legislative session focused on getting California ready for the new federal healthcare requirements. For the California Report, I'm Scott Detrow in Sacramento.
You can learn more about the Medi-Cal expansion debate on our blog, State of Health. Find a link at californiareport.org. And that's the California Report for Thursday, March 7th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Paul Lancour. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, with nomination information about the 2014 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards available at www.irvine.org, and Barracuda Networks, innovators of simple solutions to complex IT problems, such as email archiving for compliance and litigation readiness. Barracuda.com.